Hey everyone, this is day 9, and I want to talk about a pretty advanced concept called building triggers and the imaginary player. So I created the Gimme Questions thread a while ago, asking about questions people had just for me to rant on about, and a huge number of them were about builds. Like, if he does this, how do I respond with this? Or when's a good timing push? Or what's a good build in this matchup on this map? And so rather than going into specific advice and trying to answer those questions, I figure it would be really nice to give some general advice that you guys can apply in a wide variety of situations. And I mentioned two at the start. The first is what's called building a trigger, and the second is what's called the imaginary player. So let's begin with building triggers. The notion of a trigger is pretty straightforward in itself, that if A happens, you do B. And even though this is a really sort of simple idea, it has powerful, powerful applications for improving your play. So let's begin with some really simple examples that I know everyone's familiar with. As Protoss, when your shuttle is halfway done, you start building a robotic support pay. That way, when your shuttle finishes, you'll be able to start the Reaver right on time. Or in another example, when your Spire is at 300 hit points, you stop making things at all your hatcheries. That way, when the Spire finishes, you have 3 larvae ready to roll at each hatchery, and you can pump out a whole bunch of Mutalisks. Virtually everyone has experienced the two triggers that I just mentioned, because they crop up in almost every single game. Anytime Zerg is going for a Spire, he's going to be obeying this sort of law of larva timing. But in terms of other triggers, people seem to treat them as though there's this mystical knowledge that there's this oracle that appears every 100 years and dishes out some sorts of timings or whatever. But the fact remains that any player can build his own triggers if he does so in a simple, incremental fashion, which is exactly what I'm going to talk about with a personal example of my own. Let's talk about Zerg vs. Terran on Gaia, one of my absolute favorite matchups ever. Now, assuming that I'm not in vertical positions with my opponent, I love going Hydralisk Lurker because of the way that the middle of the map is kind of wide open, but also kind of looks like a large path. Now, the problem that I have when I go Hydralisk Lurk, or really that any Hydralisk Lurk player has, is that if the Terran player gets too many tanks, it becomes increasingly difficult to stop Terran pushes. If you have some number of Medic Marine and 15 well-placed tanks, It's virtually impossible to break that with any number of Hydralisk Lurkers. So in the logic of constructing my build on this map, I knew that there was a point where I needed to get Guardians. And the question is, when do I get Guardians? At this point, a critical mistake that so many players make is to think that when late game rolls around, they can just feel it out. They'll be able somehow to feel when Terran has too many tanks, and then to get the Hive. That logic does not work, and you should avoid this at all costs. I mean, consider early games. Suppose I'm Protoss, and I want to 2-gate rush a Zerg player. I never feel it out. I never just say, well, I can wing this 2-gate rush. Instead, what I do is get a precise, exact, optimized build, and follow that every single time I want to 2-gate rush a Zerg player, and I make subtle adjustments based upon what the Zerg player is doing. There's no reason why you can't do this late game, and that is exactly what I'm saying, that you want to have a precise plan of what to do late game by creating your trigger, and then you make subtle adjustments based upon what's going on. With that in mind, let's discuss how I came to answer the question, when do I get Guardians in Zerg vs. Terran on Gaia? Step 1, and by far the most important step in building your own trigger. I chose a timing completely arbitrarily. I told myself, let's get a Hive at 125 food. That's when I'm going to make my Queen's Nest and start teching up to Guardians. And I told myself I would play at least 10 games using this exact timing to see how it felt. In the actual games, I got crushed by tank pushes every single time. The Guardians were way late. So great! Now all of a sudden, rather than trying to feel my way through the late game, I instead established a hard decision with a very clear adjustment, which was get the Hive earlier. At this point, I backed off a little bit, and I said, well, let me try doing it at 90 food. And when I did it at 90 food, the results were better. I was able to hold off the pushes a little bit more effectively in the late game, but then all of a sudden, I was losing in the middle game. When the Terran's first push came out, I just didn't have enough Hydra Lurk to kill it off. So immediately I know that the trigger that I'm looking for, the timing I'm looking for, is somewhere between 90 and 125 food. And I ended up settling around 100 food as a decent time to start making the Queen's Nest and teching towards those Guardians. An important note is that I didn't need to use food as the basis for establishing these triggers. I could have used any number of wacky things. I could have said, I'll start making my Queen's Nest when my plus one attack upgrade is 75% done. Or I could have said, let me make my Queen's Nest when I get my gas done at my fourth base. I mean, anything you want to use as your trigger, totally go for it. Again, the most important concept in building your own trigger is first choosing a starting point and then incrementally adjusting that based upon your experiences in play. And the most important word there is incrementally. By far the biggest mistake that you can make when establishing these sorts of triggers is to be too hasty in making your adjustments. That's why I said that I devoted 10 games to getting my hive at 125 food, and I devoted 10 games to getting my hive at 90 food, because I wanted to make sure that I wasn't making some sort of fluke in those games that would incorrectly make me adjust my play in a wrong direction. There are two key aspects of this example I briefly want to touch on. The first is that this is a late game situation. Many players feel really daunted by late game scenarios because it feels like there are so many variables and deviations and there's a million ways you could have gotten there, and it seems like an intractable problem trying to close down on a solid solution. But as we saw in this example, I had a very simple question and there was a very simple process I followed. And remember, if you just break it down into small enough chunks, there is no problem that is too hard for any player of any level to solve. The second key point, and this is so important, if there is one thing you remember from this entire recording, let it be this. I never stopped to question whether my play was right or wrong. That is, I never said, should I be going Guardians? I never stopped to do that. I never stopped to question whether I should be going Hydralisk Lurker or anything like that. Rather, I said I am going Hydralisk Lurker on this map. It feels like I need to go Guardians. When do I get those Guardians? And I tried only to answer the question, when. That is it. That is so important in the improvement of your play to focus on a question and work on that. There are countless players in StarCraft who think the goal is to find the right build. You see these players all the time. They're two-gate rushing, you know, 1 week, and then the next week they're going early expand Bisou style, and then the next week they're just doing whatever the current trend in Pro League is. They keep changing and changing and changing. That is not your goal. The goal in StarCraft is not to find the right build. Rather, it is to find a build that you like, that is based on solid logic, and then to adjust that build and to work on it and to incorporate newer, better triggers that make that build work. For example, one day I woke up and said, I'm tired of going Mutalisk Zergling in Zerg vs. Zerg. I want to go Hydralisk. And I spent one season on PG Tour just working on that build, making adjustments, trying to form new sets of logics, doing different openings, until finally I had a solid build down. And then the following season, I went 56-1 against Zerg. I was playing at an A-plus level. And I say that not to brag, but to point out that there was absolutely nothing special about my play. I simply started with some logic, and then adjusted and adjusted and adjusted and adjusted. I mean, the one loss I had was not to a phenomenal player at all. It was actually one of the first games I'd played of the season. But he showed me that when I was doing my opening, I needed to get 12 Zerglings instead of 10. I had been relying on getting 10, but it was just too little for his aggressive 9-pool opening. And there, after that adjustment, I would face 9 pools in the future, and I could hold that off. Again, it was just these subtle adjustments. I'd like to take the time now to answer a question that I saw in the Gimme Questions thread I created, as well as to discuss a conversation I had with Zaris Light about this very topic of building triggers. So I apologize in advance for potentially butchering your name, but Oystein from Norway asked, when you have taken expansions outside your natural in Zerg vs. Terran, do you ever make units from the expansions, or do you stick strictly to drones? I love this question because it has a clear motivation, it has an answer with some foundational logic, and it can be turned into a question that will help you develop a trigger to improve your play. So first of all, let me begin with the motivation. This totally was a question that came up in my experience as a Zerg player. You know, say the map is Python and I take my main and my natural and then I take another main because I'm going for the standard sort of hive tech defiler play and whatnot. And I remember early on in my lifetime, I would wonder when I had that expansion, should I just keep making drones? It seemed to make sense because, you know, I want to have my economy slowly getting better and better, and more drones the merrier, right? Moreover, I can have a Nidus Canal linking my main in this expansion, so I can have units in both places at once. And also, when I take the natural, take my fourth base, I can just transfer drones from that expansion on down. It seemed like I could keep making drones. At the same time, I saw all sorts of benefits to making units at that expansion. If I'm making a lot of units at that expansion, then I'll have a small little army that I can just move right down the ramp, and I can use that to defend my newly building fourth expansion. Also, you know, if I'm occasionally making a defiler and some lurkers at that third base, I can use those units to counterattack. And a good example of this is GG Play versus Iris in the Everstar League Finals Game 5. So I saw benefits to both. That said, to answer your question, Oystein, yes, there is a time you want to stop making drones from that expansion and begin making units. And the logic to this is that you can have all your hatcheries make the number of drones that you want to get to the level of economy you want, and then that hatchery can join in unit production, and that ends up being much more efficient than just slowly adding drones one at a time at that expansion. But what is so key about Oystein's question is that now we can ask ourselves, when do we stop making drones? What is the appropriate level of economy? And now we are just starting an exercise in building a new trigger that will help us improve our play. And again, what I love so much about Oystein's question is that it has a natural motivation that can be stated as a simple problem. And all we have to do is use some simple logic to reword that as a trigger building exercise. In another example, I was talking to my friend Zaris on the phone about one base Dragoon Reaver on Requiem. Because Requiem has really close starting positions, one base aggressive play is really, really great against Zerg because Zerg has to stay low econ in the early game. So if you can get a really good timing push in there with Dragoon Reaver, it's surprisingly difficult to stop. As I was discussing this build with Zaris, he asked me, when do I get Dragoon range? I know I want to have range when I make my Goon Reaver push, but I'm not sure if I need to get it earlier, you know, to say hold off some sort of Hydra Ling bust at my front. And I think that that is a perfectly worded question for a trigger building exercise. So let's just kind of outline the process that we would do in that situation. It's now time to pretend that I am a budding young Protoss superstar and that I have taken it upon myself to figure out precisely when to get Dragoon range on Requiem. So, step one. I need to choose an arbitrary time to start getting Dragoon range so I have some place to work with, so I have some benchmark for comparison. When I say arbitrary, it's important to note that I do not mean stupid. You should always use some sort of logic to make sure you have a reasonable starting point. So, in my eyes, a reasonable starting point is to get Dragoon range to finish right before I make that Dragoon Reaver push. So, I'll say to myself, I want Dragoon range to finish right as my Reaver finishes. Now, all of a sudden, I have a complete army with a shuttle Reaver and a bunch of Dragoons with range, so now is a good time to attack. So my arbitrary timing might be start Dragoon range right when my Reaver starts. What I might discover after a game or two is that the Reaver finishes much more quickly than range. At this point, I might say to myself, okay, I need a back range up. I'm going to start getting range when my shuttle begins, as opposed to when my Reaver begins. And let's say that timing works perfectly. So now, right as my Reaver pops out, Dragoon range finishes and I'm ready to roll out. Then suppose at this time, I find that my push gets crushed over and over again. And I think to myself, I need to wait until I get that second Reaver to attack. As a result, I no longer need to get Dragoon range so early. Let me start getting Dragoon range when my first Reaver begins, as opposed to when my shuttle begins. And then let's say that timing lines up well. And right as my second Reaver pops out, Dragoon range finishes, and I'm ready to roll out once more. I've made a minor adjustment based upon the success of this push, and again, kept the focus in my mind on when that Dragoon range upgrade was beginning. Further suppose that at this point, I play maybe 10-15 games, and against every Hydralisk Ling player, this push crushes them. I'm just steamrolling Zerg after Zerg, and I'm feeling much more confident in my play, until I get to a player who is going 2-base Mutalisk instead of doing this Zergling Hydralisk low econ opening. Against this sort of player, I might find myself helpless against his Mutalisks early on, because I don't get Dragoon range until right when these Reavers finish, so I might be having a huge difficulty dealing with Mutalisk harass. And it's important then to say, well, gee, now I need to start getting Dragoon range earlier, and then you plan it and try to line up that timing for when his Mutalisks pop out. Having adjusted the Dragoon range timing, I need to make sure that my push hasn't been delayed too much, because if I'm really good at holding off Mutalisk players now, I need to make sure that I don't equally suck against the Hydra Ling players. What may be the case is that I find that I can get away with upgrading Dragoon range early to hold off these Mutalisk players, and my push has not been delayed so much that I still can't crush those Hydra Ling players. Although this was an entirely theoretical exercise, it's a completely reasonable example of how you would be adjusting play game in and game out. Note that I never stopped to say, is Dragoon Reaver good or bad on Requiem? I just began with the assumption that it was, and then tried to adjust it until I found that Dragoon range timing that worked just right for me. Again, as I mentioned earlier, what you'll soon find is there may be situations where you can delay Dragoon range sometimes, and then maybe have to get it early some other times, and all your logic will eventually condense down into a feeling that will allow you to precisely get Dragoon range at just the right time in every single game. I've spent a long time talking about building triggers, so now I want to talk about an abstract and very related concept called the imaginary player. This is the notion that because you cannot see what your player is doing, because of the fog of war, you have to account for all possibilities of his play until you know exactly what he is doing. For instance, if I'm playing against a Terran player and he went 1-base fast gas and I can't get up his ramp to see what he's doing, he could be going for a fast 2-factory push. He could be going for fast 2-port Wraith. He could be going for a fast dropship. He could be going 1-factory Vulture Harass into an expansion. I just don't know what he's doing yet. So I must assume that I am playing against all of those possibilities, all of those imaginary players, until I know precisely which one my opponent is. To many of you, this sounds like I'm saying, be sure to account for possibilities, but the notion of the imaginary player is in fact much, much deeper than that, and is critical for you to work out all sorts of timings and triggers so that you can truly become a great player. Once I have a build that I really like, that I think is really solid, what I do is I get about 5 replays of that build against all the possible types of players I could play against. So, for example, let's go back to my Zerg vs. Terran on Gaia. Let's say I really like my Hydralisk Lurker build. What I'm going to do is make sure I've played this build style against Fast Expand, that I've played against 2 Barracks Fast Factory, that I've played against Fast Gas and all the variations I mentioned earlier, against 2 Racks Fast Expand, make sure I've dealt it against, or played it against weird sorts of all-ins and bunker rushes, I make sure that I have replays against all of these variations. And that is when I figure out the timings for imaginary players. For example, I'll watch 5 replays of a Terran player who goes 2 racks Medic Marine into Fast Expand. And I'll mentally line up all his timings with mine. I'll say something like, okay, I see his command center when my layer finishes. And I'll line up other things like say, well, my evolution chamber generally finishes when his engineering base starts. Or, you know, he makes in his academy when my hatchery has this many hit points from being finished. All these sorts of little things. I can even do things like say, you know, he makes this building when my food is at this much. I mean, every player is used to saying things like, I make my overlord on 18. And I'm telling you, you should think things like, when I make my overlord on 18, that's when he makes his academy on my 18. And then I'll extend this further. I'll watch 5 replays against a player who went 2-port Wraith. And I'll get all those timings worked out, when his starports start and finish in relation to my lair. Against a 2-factory player, I know exactly when that push leaves his base based upon what my food is. After hours of studying these replays, I now have a complete mental picture of what all possible Terrans are doing based upon my play and the numbers I get from my build. When every game begins, I'm always aware of all the things that my imaginary Terran opponents are doing. And throughout the early parts of the game, I'm constantly thinking to myself, which imaginary players can I cross off? Which brings me to an absolutely critical idea that all high-level players abuse relentlessly. And that is what I call the non-trigger. The basic idea of a non-trigger is that when you know your opponent's timings well enough, you know that if you see nothing at certain points of time, you can cross imaginary players out of your list. For example, suppose my Terran opponent goes 2 racks and that's all I get to see. He could be going for a fast tank push, he could be going for Medic Marine and early expand, he could be going for some sort of aggressive one base play. Those are the 3 imaginary players I have in my mind, and 3 imaginary players whose timings I know intimately. And for example, if my player is early expanding, I know it exactly when I first see that command center, and I can go 3, 2, 1, and if I see nothing, I immediately know he's not early expanding, and I start preparing myself for a fast tank push, and preparing myself to be against a one-basing Terran player. This seemingly counterintuitive idea is unbelievably powerful, that you always know exactly what your opponent is doing, that you can cross off all imaginary players until you have pinpointed exactly who your opponent is, purely through key periods of nothing. Many players incorrectly assume certain situations in StarCraft are rock, paper, scissors because they don't acknowledge the power of non-triggers. They'll watch 2 professional players play and neither of them will scout each other very much, and when they finally confront one another, the first player will have an army that absolutely crushes the second player. And many amateurs will look at that and say, oh, well, the first player just won because of his opening game build. But the fact remains that the opening player is constantly adjusting his opening because he's seeing nothing from the second player at key periods of time. Never assume that StarCraft is rock, paper, scissors. There is always a solution there. If you spend time practicing on keeping track of all the imaginary players and focusing on what the non-triggers tell you, you will never be surprised in StarCraft. I probably get surprised by what my opponent's doing once out of every 1,000 games, because I'm always keeping track of all the possibilities in my head. Well, that about wraps up my rant for today. Hopefully some of you found that useful. I really hope you guys can incorporate the idea of building triggers not only to just generally improve your play, but to help you discover timings in the styles of play and the builds that you like. Because there's no point in playing a game like StarCraft if you're having someone else's fun. I also hope that you can incorporate the notion of the imaginary player into your play, not just because it's obviously helpful and it will greatly bolster your confidence in game, as you'll never be surprised, But more importantly, I think one of the most rewarding feelings that I get in StarCraft consistently is just knowing exactly what my opponent is doing, and then when I rewatch the replay, I was right. That is just such a powerfully cool feeling to be like, yeah, I know he's making it, you know, his academy here and his engineering bay here and his expansion should be finishing about now. And when you rewatch it, you're just dead on the money. And that's just such a confidence booster that you're on the right track. And hopefully you'll use the imaginary player logic to build your own clever non-triggers that will give you perhaps the greatest joy possible in StarCraft, being accused of being a map hacker. That concludes my rant. This is day 9. Thank you very much for listening. Cheers!